the local safeguarding adults board annual report. We've got Margaret Geary to give that, and it's over to you.
Okay. First, you'll have noted that it's a safeguarding report for 16-17. So what we're trying to do is highlight some of the key points from it and just talk about highlights, how we built upon that from there. In the safeguarding adults board, we obviously depend on the commitment of our partners, several of whom are in the room at the moment. We work mainly through three subgroups, safeguarding adults review group, training group, and quality and performance. I just want to touch on the two cases that are in the report, because I think a lot of our work is around those people who have been vulnerable and died as a result of that. And we undertake to commission investigations, independent investigations, to why that's happened. And we try to learn lessons on that and run a number of workshops afterwards with partners about how we avoid the same circumstances again. Family G is cited in that report, and that was a domestic homicide case, which many of you may well recall. A very sad case where the father killed the daughter, and there was a level of domestic abuse in the history of the case. It was an opportunity for us to work closely with our colleagues in Children's Safeguarding Board. And it was an opportunity which we took. It was the first time we'd undertaken a joint piece of work of that kind. And for most of the time, and certainly during the investigation, that worked really well. We did learn some lessons about how we hadn't got the communication processes in place properly around publishing the report and whose responsibility that was. And there were some differences in emphasis between the Children's Board and the Adults Board about the importance of the of course of control with the mother, between the father and the mother. And I think we sorted some of that out as we went through the experience. One of the things we then did in the next year was to put a protocol in place between ourselves and the Children's Board. And in 18-19, we will follow that up with some more work around how we work much more closely together on some of the issues that we share in terms of sexual exploitation, transition work with particularly people with learning disabilities, and some of the other issues that we jointly are concerned about around Think Family. In terms of Miss T, which is the other case in the report, it was an example. It wasn't a full safeguarding adults review because Miss T died at the age of 30 as a result of a heart attack linked to drugs and alcohol misuse. She had a long history of sexual exploitation from childhood, and that was the cause of the referral to the safeguarding board. And I think what we learned through that case, really, and police and ourselves were heavily involved, ourselves and the adult social care services were heavily involved in that, was that there was a level of ignorance on the part of some of our professionals about each other's legal responsibilities and limitations. So, for example, in terms of the Mental Health Act, I think police colleagues hadn't understood that you couldn't hold someone indefinitely under certain circumstances. And similarly, the Mental Health Service hadn't understood that the PACE legislation for the police meant they couldn't also hold somebody as long as they expected them. So we learned about the need to actually be much better appraised of each other's legal obligations. And I think that has got better in 17-18 as a result of trying to develop a version of the multi-agency safeguarding hub on the island, the MASH as it's called. The police colleagues have some concern about calling it a MASH because it's not the same as on the mainland, because there isn't the resource from the police to actually service and support that here. But there is an embryonic development now of a MASH here, which meets three days a week and brings together the police and adult services to look at cases that are deemed to be safeguarding referrals and think about how best to respond to those and whether or not they are seen as safeguarding. We hope that will develop and build over the next year so that we can bring in health and put a business case together and put that health and get health participation in that MASH. The other development this year has been the multi-agency risk management for meeting forum, and that has been very successful in bringing partners together to look at an earlier stage of the risks involved for vulnerable adults so that they can intervene more appropriately earlier and avoid the safeguarding issues becoming much more difficult. That has attracted national attention actually in terms of its success, and there's been a recent conference, risk conference nationally, at which the Isle of Wight presented the work of the multi-agency risk management group, which is called MARM. Okay. So those are really important developments for us, and we hope we'll build on those this coming year. Making safeguarding personal is the other topic that's theme was mentioned in the report. That launch took place on the 16th of April in 2016. It's a major or a significant cultural change for both health and social care. So, and I don't think there's many places in the country where everybody can say they've got this right, that we're moving towards having people have more control over what happens when they get referred into safeguarding and how they, what kind of responses are made to them. And that's clearly very important. If those responses are going to be successful and sustainable, then they need to have that control and that involvement. We have supported in 1718 an independent review of what's happening on the island in relation to making safeguarding personal across the services, and we're reporting on that at the next board meeting. We have a close working relationship with Health Watch, and they have picked up some work in 2016, which you have all heard about in terms of the care homes and the quality of care homes on the island. As a result of that work in 1718, partners led by the CCG, but jointly, have put together a quality framework to work with care homes and look at improving the quality across the board with those care homes. I think initially, given that care homes have got a lot of forms to fill in and things to frameworks to respond to, there's been a little bit of resistance to that, but I think it is a really important piece of work for us on the island so that we can honestly say that there has been a major improvement in some of the issues that cause risk in care homes, nursing homes, and in domestic and dog care, in home care. So that's going on at the moment. In 2016, we had a very heavy reliance, and still do, on the adult social care outcomes framework for the data that we collect. That still remains the case, but in 2017-18, Andy Tyson from the Clinical Commission Group has put together a universal data process for health around safeguarding and at risk and quality. And we're looking to use that in the future, in future reports, and really work that up so that it means something to all of those involved in looking at evidence of what the theme should be, what the priorities should be in safeguarding. We also have, as you'll know from your report, that you'll note that there's 1,898 referrals to safeguarding in 2016. 570 of which were converted to Section 42 referrals and investigations. That suggests that we haven't got the thresholds right on safeguarding, that practitioners don't understand what's eligible for referrals for safeguarding, and they're referring many more issues. A lot of those have to do with medical incidents and falls, etc., but they're referring into the safeguarding and they turn out not to be a safeguarding issue. So in this year, we have undertaken some work to get a decision tool out and some guidance on thresholds. And that currently is being circulated to partners so that we can test out whether it will work for them and whether we can manage those thresholds better. Partners, I've said, are really important. I've mentioned Health Watch. We depend heavily on Health Watch to get people's experience included, not just data and policies, but people's experience included in our understanding and the evidence we use to actually decide on the priorities in relation to safeguarding. We work closely with the Community Safety Partnership and with Children's Safeguarding. We also have our statutory leads group, which is really important to us, and that those statutory leads are police, adult social care, and the clinical commissioning group. And they meet usually about a fortnight before board meetings and have a say on the shape of what the agenda is in those board meetings. We also work with Hampshire and the Portsmouth, Southampton safeguarding boards. And actually, the decision tool and the thresholds and the guidance is, we are leading on that in the Hampshire context, and we're beginning to lead on a number of those issues in Hampshire. Okay, I just finished
it. Well, first of all, thank you very much. The report has been circulated. There's a couple of points I've got which I'll come back to. Zonia, did you want to make any comments or observations on it, particularly as you've been positively commented on by the...
Yes, thank you. I
understand
Health Watch, and of course, I'm pleased to hear that the work which has been done by our volunteers and the review team was recognized and was beneficial for the board and for the partnership here on the island. I have just a couple of questions, if I may. One of them relates to page 26, I believe. Actually, it says C26 and above it says 25, so whichever page it is. And there is section A summary. It shows quite interesting figures where we have statistics for safeguarding concerns that commenced during the reporting period. And I noticed that figures for number of individuals are higher than figures for number of cases. Does it mean that there were sort of several cases for each individual, or it is some other interpretation? Just I'm not sure how to understand this particular piece of stats.
Thank you. So in terms of, if you just look around the concerns and the cases, it is because on occasion we've had an alert and it's gone. It's been a repeated alert, and therefore the cases, the individual has been referred and re-referred, yeah. Or the issue has been referred and re-referred. And that goes back very much to the point that Margaret's been making. Sorting out the thresholds here, and you can see earlier in the report, page 8, we have a conversion rate on average of between 20 and 30%. I can tell you last month it was at 21%. Our conversion rate between the alerts that we get and the conferences we do should be closer to about 66% when you look comparatively. We are doing, again, comparatively, the right number of safeguarding conferences, so there's nothing about the number of conferences that we're doing when you look again at that empirical data that makes the Isle of Wight stand out. But it is the fact that referrals come in for those things that do not meet safeguarding thresholds. So we've done two things about that. Margaret's already mentioned one in terms of the threshold piece of work and decision-making tool. And my first meeting of this morning was with Jane Hughes, who developed that safeguarding and decision-making tool, and she's going to be working for an additional 12 days for us to really ensure we embed it. And most particularly, and I'm seeing Barbara later on this afternoon, most particularly around the meds errors pathway. But the second thing that we did was that really worried me. So last summer, coming in, I was concerned with this volume coming through that we'd miss key risks. So we had an independent review undertaken by Hilary Corrick, who reported into the Safeguarding Adults Board to look at all of these cases, which are repeat cases, to see how we missed. You know, I was concerned that perhaps practitioners would be coming inured. Oh, it's yet another referral from this provider, or it's yet another referral about this individual. We've been there before, it's resulted in nothing. So I was concerned that that might happen, which meant that when there was something which was absolutely about safeguarding, we would miss it. Hilary's report gave us some really important pointers, but I think it's important to say she did not identify a single individual in terms of the final analysis she did who had been found where there was any safeguarding issue that had not been responded to. So sorting this is not only important for efficiency, it's really important for effective work.
Thank you. And one more question. Page C10-9 above it. Case of family G. The main recommendation point from the review of this case was adoption of the strategic approach to sink family on the Isle of Wight. And my question is, as far as I'm aware, sort of going back to 2012-13, this whole family, sink family approach was already in place. So were there any specific issues or deficiencies in that particular approach at the time? And what are exactly specific things for the partnership to focus attention? Because just saying think family approach may not be sufficient.
No. I think that's probably right. That's why I was mentioning some of those, like the transition arrangements for people with learning disabilities. Sexual exploitation is clearly something that happens early on and continues. There are mental health issues as well that we should be looking at, how that transits into adulthood and the effect of mental health, drugs abuse, alcohol in adults around children's concerns and safety, and how we approach both of those. But there are a number of others as well, and we're sitting down with Children's Safeguarding Board to identify some of those and to decide where we start, really. So that we should have a couple of practical couple of practical things to have rather than take on the whole lot.
Really interesting point. Can we just put then just an item for us to come back to our next board as to what's come out of that? Because I do pick up the point you make. It's having a strategic process is fine. If it doesn't deliver on it, then it's just a document. So are you happy to pick that action up, that you'll give us an update of the result of that? Any other questions from the room, Steve?
Just on that thing, Frank, there was a very specific government-backed programme called, I think, Family back in 2008-9. I think this is a progression on from that, actually, and it's something a bit different, and it's about embedding that into every profession, and it goes both ways, so that practitioners who work with children get better at thinking about the whole family, including, for example, mum's mental health, and that practitioners who work with adults get better at thinking about there's an impact on children if we do X, Y, and Z. And it's a task that will never be finished, because you have to keep working at it constantly to keep people in that right space.
So I think there can't be any more important area than the safeguarding. You've quoted two tragic cases as an example, but I'm sure there are other cases out there which, you know, we want to try and almost intercept before we get to that end, because that's where we are. I've just got 3 points. Do you have representation from each board or the other board? So in other words, you're talking about integration, so the children board and adults, is there a kind of cross-pollination going on?
Yes.
That's a good one. Is the MASH issue, mentioned when I looked at, is that an ongoing discussion, or do we need to get some clarity in that one?
Thank you, Chair. Margaret alluded to the fact that policing, we're not content to call it a match because it isn't a match. It's a multi-agency, or currently a dual-agency discussion, which is really positive step forward from where we were. In fact, Barbara and I were just talking earlier about how we progress with health. So those conversations are definitely ongoing. I'm very much accountable to the board, Margaret, to make sure she brings it to the board each time. We just need to make sure we identify how we do that going forward, but also how we link then to the MASH on the mainland, which obviously Hampshire feed into, and send to the rest of the constabulary and other partners, because that's where the children sit. So we're going to get to think family, we need to make a connection between the two as well, otherwise we're creating more silos.
Thank you. Can we take an action there then, just to get an update on that, because I can see the confusion, that's not the right word, that's going on, and we'd like to know how that's been progressed, because we certainly don't want to block anything by misconstruing what's happening. The other one is, in the report itself, you refer to the festival and the festival and all the good work. We now have coming up the Pride, UK Pride event July.
The 1st of July.
So if you rightly identified a concern in the first two, I don't know if you're working with the Pride group, or if not, do you think it would be appropriate to, in order to pick up that? Because I think currently we're expecting quite a large number of people to come to the islands, and obviously you want to be covering that as well.
I will pick up that. In the last year, we have done some joint work with Children's to support the Pride type work.
Okay, so just for your information, our council links on that is Ashley Curzon, who's the officer, and Stuart Hutchinson, who's the member, both of whom are in close contact with the Pride team, and we're trying to support them as practically as we can. Thank you for that. Okay, then we're asked to note that report. Sorry, Paul.
That's a very simple question, actually. That's partly been asked and answered already. On the MASH side of things, I've been to MASH, and the work they do for Children's Services is brilliant. I just wondered why we're setting up a mini part-time MASH when we can join a perfectly well-working service on the mainland straight away. So I couldn't see why it's like a mini MASH when it's one ready made to use, and it's brilliant.
Do you want to take that one away, or do you want to try and go from there? Take it away.
We have for some time been concerned about the lack of a hub for adult services on the island and for safeguarding adults, and one that is accessible to local people. We just haven't had the capacity in adults to support that kind of process on the mainland. It's slightly different for children in that the governance for children is Hampshire, and it makes it a little easier for them to do that. So we think there's an absolute need for something locally, whether we call it a MASH, we probably won't end up calling it a MASH, is the truth, but we need something that fulfills that function.
So you're going to take that one away as homework and come back to the next meeting on that day.
Adult Social Care is the lead statutory agency for adult safeguarding. And what we needed to achieve for those we served on this island, because that's the population that we serve, is a focus of those practitioners working around safeguarding adults here. To engage in the Hampshire-wide MASH, to be a bit more direct in terms of response, would demand that we took our Paris system over and that fed into the Hampshire MASH. And it would demand that we had social workers who were permanently based across the water. So that's the difficulty that we face. Our statutory duty is about the people who live on this island. And because we're not an adult services that stretches into Hampshire, we are an adult services that's located here. That's the difficulty that I think, bluntly, we face.
Okay, so we'll take that one away. Mental health is a key part of what you're doing here. We've got our mental health champion in the room. We know we have good experience around the country of problems that get caused, so I do think this is a real high priority. Perhaps we can look to the anything between now and the next board you want to discuss what's going on, more than happy to have an offline chat on. So thank you for that. We'll move on because of time. Item 9.